From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, I'm Stephen Licorice, and this is the Autosport National Podcast. So every week there's numerous club racing events that take place up and down the country. And last weekend there was a very special one at Thruxton. It was the revamped Thruxton Retro, which combined some great historic racing along with a whole wealth of different off-track activities. And I'm delighted to say that I'm joined this week by a special guest to look back at the event. So Ben Taylor is Chief Executive of the British Automobile Racing Club, which runs both Thruxton and organised the Thruxton Retro event. So Ben, welcome to the podcast, and how are you doing after what I know has been a very busy few weeks for you guys?
You say it's been a bit chaotic. Hi. If my voice is a bit gravelly, it's because we're just coming off the back of what feels like it was a very long weekend. But it was fantastic. We had a really great experience there for the first running of the Thruxton Retro, formerly the Thruxton Historic, which dates back as far as 2018 when it was the celebration or the anniversary meeting of the 50-year anniversary of VARC at Thruxton. It was all new and really exciting.
Yeah, as you say, it was all given a bit of a revamp this year, and a new name, a slightly different feel. So I wondered if you could begin by just sort of talking us through what the changes you made were and what the thinking behind them was, really.
So in order to get to the thinking, it sort of goes back to the new ownership of Thruxton Circuit. So Alex Thistlethwaite bought the track in May of, or took over the track in May of last year. BARC is just a tenant at Thruxton, at Croft, and at Pembrey. And so Alex came in and we started meeting and talking and understanding what his objectives were, and the fact that, you know, BARC is there with a lease for till 2037. So, you know, the duration. But Alex, unlike some of the people that might have bought the circuit, or maybe Henry Pelham, who had been a very gracious and benevolent landlord for many, many years, Alex is a historic racer. You know, he's got a whole load of cars. He enjoys driving. And so there's a natural affinity between him and the circuit that maybe hasn't existed there before. Obviously, he's got an airfield and an industrial estate, but the thing that really attracted him was the race circuit itself. And he doesn't want to just sit on the side and let us get on with it. He wants to be involved, and he wants to see if he can help us to improve. I think the brief is really that he wants Thruxton to be even more magnificent than it currently is. You know, he just wants it to be fabulous. More people to use it, more people come to it, more people to experience it if they've never been there before, more people to drive it, more people to enjoy themselves there, whatever it is that they're doing. And out of that came discussions about whether he could maybe get involved and help us with one of our race meetings. And I have to be honest, I was a little bit skeptical. I said, it's not really what we do. That's what we do in order to pay the rent. So we talked a bit more. And then we had the historic in the June, and he said, "Oh, I'd really like to be involved in the historic." And rather than taking it over altogether, which I said that's probably not going to start, we said, "Well, let's work together on it. Let's see what we can do. Let's see if we can get a joint venture together on this one event." And so we kicked it off with the team on my side from Thruxton. Pat Blakeney, who was still there as circuit manager at the time, Lorne Michener and Ben Norton, and Alex around the table with Sam Bolam, his chief operating officer. And we just started sitting around the table and throwing some stupid ideas around. And I can't remember whether it was the first meeting, but someone came up with the word funk. And And we went, okay, yeah, we understand what we're talking about when we say that. I think we were talking about a 70s element, or we said, let's do something. I think we got quite quickly to retro. And again, I'll go back a little bit further. I've always felt that the Thruxton Historic doesn't need to compete in the marketplace with, you know, the Donington Historic or the Silverstone Festival or Goodwood and things like that. It's older cars racing on the circuit, so we don't need to be too precious about what the particular genre is. Mm-hmm. These are older cars that people would recognize from the past. And so we thought that the word retro is a sort of a catch-all for classic, historic, vintage. Well, I mean, it can be whatever you want because it's retro. It's just older than you currently are at the moment. So we thought about the Thruxton Retro. And as I say, we then alighted for some reason on the 70s theme and we started being ridiculous and talking about Starsky and Hutch and Dukes of Hazzard and getting the General Lee there. And then we talked about music because music had to be a real integral part of what it was that we were doing. And we best summed up the words of the music best summed up in the word funk. And then somewhere from, I don't know where, the back of the room, someone piped up and said, oh, we could call it super funk. And we sort of all went, nah, that's rubbish. And it was one of those things that we kept coming back to every meeting. We kept referring to super funk, but saying, but that's only a working title. And it's always the same. It's always the same when you give something a working title. It never loses it. I'm sure there's films that have come to market that have not been called what they might have been called because they've just stuck with the working title. I'm sure there's car names as well. There's probably engine names or, you know, probably teams. You start talking about something and before you know it, it's in everyday parlance and you're stuck with it. And then you can't find anything better. And so...
Yeah, you can't look beyond it.
You can't get past it. And every time you try and come up with something else, oh yeah, we won't call it super funk, we'll call it... And then you go, no, that doesn't quite work. So it doesn't mean anything, but it just sort of conveyed something. And here I am sitting in my T-shirt, look. The Thruxton Retro presents super funk. And the Thruxton Retro is the event, but super funk was the... Thruxton Retro is a meeting, but Superfunk was the event, the festival that went around it. And I have to say, it exceeded all of my objectives and all of my ambitions for it were exceeded by what happened. And that's down to a load of work and a load of hard work by a load of people. But it couldn't have been better for us in terms of the first year to try something, because you never quite know. Nobody knows what you're talking about. There's no pictures of last year's to say this is what it's going to look like. So everyone's on a leap of faith, really, and you don't know if anyone's going to turn up, and also you don't know what the weather's going to do. And I've spent probably 5 months this year praying for really good weather for last weekend, and then I've spent about 5 days praying for really not too good weather because it was threatening to be like 31, 32 degrees, which is just brutal. And it was. It was really super hot Thursday, Friday during setup and then Saturday as well. But what it meant was that everybody could sit outside. Everybody had a fantastic, there was a great atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Everyone had a fantastic experience, really relaxed, really nice vibe, very chilled. Beer tent, sitting, enjoying summer's evening, great music on the Friday and the Saturday night, food stands, fairground, children's entertainers, bouncy castle, you know, the whole thing. It was all going on. And I think by and large, everybody blooming well loved it. And that's all that, that's all you can ask really when you put something on like
absolutely.
That. Absolutely. That people have a good time. Because I was going to say, if you don't have a good time in the first year, then there's no point coming back trying to do it for a second year because nobody will come and they'll tell all the people that think about coming that it was rubbish last year, so don't bother doing it. Whereas if everyone goes away having had a good experience in the first year, then hopefully they tell all their friends and they come back next year and they bring some friends with them as well. And then we have an event that we can maybe start to do quite well with.
Yeah, definitely. No, it's certainly, unfortunately, I wasn't able to make it along, but from what I've heard, it sounds like it was a really, as you said, really good atmosphere, really good feeling there. And it was great to see so many people enjoying that whole range of different activities that were on offer. And also,
I've only talked about the stuff that happened off the track.
Yes.
Going alongside that was some great racing. We had a packed schedule, actually. It's so difficult to do some of the promotional stuff we wanted to do because Mark Turner had done a great job of filling the program with lots of great content, which meant we were really struggling to do demonstration laps. We had a parade lap for some of the car clubs because they were all out on the banks as well. That was great. And we had a fabulous F1 demo run of, I think it was about 8 cars that sounded spectacular. We could literally only find them 15 minutes on the schedule each day on the Saturday and on the Sunday. But wow, the noise that they generated, I took a video as I walked down through the assembly area as they all fired up. And I walked in between the two lines of cars as each engine sort of fired up in unison. It was like walking through the pipes of an organ or something. And it just made this amazing noise and reminded me of how my ears used to hurt way back when I started working in motorsport in the 90s. And yeah, it was very evocative and the smell was great. So you had those, and the other great noise of the weekend was the Jochenring Trophy, which is Rob Manger's amazing single-seater triumph. And you know, there was some great racing. I think one of the races was won by 3 seconds after 30, 40 minutes of racing. And it was I have to confess, I saw so little of the action on the track. I can't even tell you who won the races, who was driving round and round. No, but I just didn't see it because I spent literally most of the weekend running around sorting out stuff that needed to be sorted out. Just getting stuck in and making sure that the event and the festival was going fine, because I knew that the racing side would take care of itself because everybody knows what they're doing with that. And of course, we had the biggest grid of the weekend was the MGs, which was, that was a capacity grid, I think, of 42 cars on the Sunday. And Jim Bain had done an amazing job getting all those cars together. And they had a couple of great races. Gave us a bit of a headache on the Saturday night, to be honest, getting them in. 42 cars to arrive at 6:30 on Saturday while GT and Sports Car Cup and the Formula Fords were vacating the paddock while actually wanted to stay there and watch the music first before they did. It was like, no, come on, guys, you've got to move your stuff. Because if you don't, then we can't get these other ones in. So we had 2 leaving and 3 arriving. So there was there wasn't a huge amount of space, and the space available was compromised by obviously what we were doing with the festival, which was right next door to the paddock. So, it's always one of those things, isn't it? If you take up space to put something else in, then you're reducing the space that you've got available for anything else. So, yeah,
but I think it's a nice problem to have at the end of the day.
a nice problem to have. Great racing, great grids. As far as I'm aware, everybody that was racing had a great experience, had a great weekend. I had people coming up to us anecdotally and going, "Do you know what? I've been racing for 15, 20 years. I've raced at Thruxton loads. This is the best race meeting I've ever been to." And that's a really nice bit of feedback, because everybody wants to have a good weekend. And we recognize, both on the circuit side and on the racing side. So here we've got a joint thing between the BARC competitions department and Thruxton Circuit. We're obviously part of the same parent company, but two different entities. Everyone's got a choice of where they spend their money, of where they go at the weekends, of what they want to do, or the events they choose that they want to go. And the marshals have got exactly the same challenge as well. You know, can't do everything. So which ones are we going to do and which ones are we not going to do? We really don't want to be the ones that people don't want to do. We're never going to be, as I said, we're never going to be trying to challenge the historic authenticity of Donington or Silverstone or Goodwood or Spa or wherever. But we think we've got a great circuit that's untouched since 1968, still in exactly the same configuration. The people have been racing around, and it's we just want more people to come and enjoy it because we only get 6 race meetings a year as a result of our planning. So the opportunity to drive at Thruxton is a little bit limited. We obviously lose 2 of those meetings to BTCC and to British Superbikes. So it's about getting competitors to come and enjoy it. It's about spectators giving them something that they really like enjoying. And if we can put stuff around it and make it into a really nice feeling and vibe like we did, then all well and good. And credit to everybody who worked so hard on the team and on the ground. You know, the boys put in a real shift. We're in the middle of 3 big events in 4 weeks. Touring cars 2 weeks ago, the retro this weekend. We've got trucks in 10 days time. It is a bit of a killer schedule, which I promised to them. I make them a humble promise that we won't be doing again next year. But the strains and the demands that it puts on everybody, because it's not just setting it up. It's not just over the weekend. It's in the breaking down and then doing all the other stuff that still needs to be done. And the grass continues to grow and the paint needs doing and all the general maintenance stuff needs doing. And then we've got driving experiences on at the end of this week as well. And it puts a huge strain on people. I don't think anybody really understands what it takes to put on even a moderate size event. And to ask people to keep going and going and going, it's a lot. So I owe a great debt of gratitude to everybody that worked so hard to make it happen. And to Alex and his team as well, because you know, they were the catalyst for the creative spark for this in the first instance. And their team came to the table as well and really helped to deliver what it was that we did. So I think we're all feeling that we're really proud of what we've achieved. We're looking forward to doing it again.
Yes.
But maybe not for another year just yet.
Yes. Try and recover from this one and then go again next year.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely. And you mentioned earlier about the Jochen Trophy being one of the real highlights, and this attracts a real mix of different historic single-seaters. And as you said, it was a really close competition actually between the Formula 2 Chevron B40 of Chris Porritt and the Formula Atlantic Rout RT4 of Rory Smith. And it was an interesting battle between them on the aggregate across the two races, because Porritt was fairly dominant in the opener after Smith got delayed in traffic. Then in race 2, Smith had the advantage. He was the one that pulled clear. But then Porritt closed in just enough to win on aggregate. So it was a really close battle between the two.
And you had the 3 seconds. Was it about 3 seconds gap or something?
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you were watching. Because I was just hearing it, so I have no idea.
Well, even just hearing it is a joy.
It was a real treat. Yeah, you're right. And Rob Main just done such a great job with that Jochen Rindt Trophy. He created it from nothing. It's a complete startup.
Yeah.
And the passion and the drive and the energy that he puts into that, effectively as a, you know, just for fun. You know, he's not, mm-hmm. not running a business. He's just really well connected with lots of people who really respect him, and he puts this event together and now extending it into a couple of Formula Libre events. And, you know, people like Rob are just so valuable because of their knowledge, their contacts, their enthusiasm. And seeing him proud, standing in the pit lane, almost like his babies are going off to primary school. And you know, it was great. And spending the Saturday evening with him and Simone, standing watching the music on Saturday night was great. And yeah, it's a really great guy, and he's done a fabulous job with that.
Definitely, yeah, it was a really good grid of cars, and we also had likes of ex-Formula 1 driver Mike Wilds was taking part. He ended up finishing fourth on aggregate in a Formula Atlantic Lynk car at the age of 79, so it was a really, really
you never lose it.
Nice mix of drivers.
Now, in terms of name checks, though, you've missed out whoever was third, so they're not going to be very happy, are they? Because they were on the podium.
Well, that was Mark Harrison, so he was in third spot. So, but just a great mix of different cars and drivers, and just one of many of the on-track highlights. And you mentioned next year. I know it's probably too early to even think about it, but is there anything in particular that you would like to try and sort of add or build upon for the second edition of the event?
Yes, there is, but I don't know what they are at the moment. We've got a series of debriefs scheduled starting next week to just go through the list and look at, well, in the first instance, you always end up focusing on the negative. You look at what didn't go right, what can be improved, and there's loads of things that can be improved because we're all perfectionists at the end of the day. But it's really important in those debriefs to take some time to reflect on what was really good, because it's always very easy to come out with a negative agenda that says, oh, that was rubbish and that was rubbish and that was rubbish and we need to do this, this and this. But actually, the overall feeling is exactly what we were aiming for. The ambiance, the vibe of the place was exactly what we're looking for. So I'm sure we'll look to extend the reach of it, build the audience, build the crowd, build the facilities, make sure that we can cope with those people. You know, we had 300 people, 300 campsite pitches over the weekend, which is more than we've ever had for the historic in the past. And that's probably about 1,200 people sleeping on site in the campsite. We were probably up at about 8,000 or 9,000 people across the weekend, you know, coming through the gate, which is exactly, you know, where we want it to be. Not too big, but not too small that it would have been embarrassing to have put that all on for no one to come and see us. And you know what? Funny enough, that's why we picked the historic, because we've got a really strong crowd with touring cars, really strong crowd with BSB. We've worked super hard on the truck race meeting, which comes up, as I said, in 10 days' time. Over the last 3 or 4 years with Stuart Oliver and the team at Trucksport to develop the off-track stuff that's made that into a much bigger event than it ever was previously. And we looked at the historic last year and we said, it was great racing, really great content on the track, but we got 1,500 people through the gate over the weekend. And that's a real shame, because it's really fabulous stuff that people have the opportunity to see. So how do we expose it to more people? And that's why we looked at the historic and repackaged that. So there is a bit of method in our madness. We don't just throw this together, you know.
No, there is an awful lot of planning that goes into it, and it's great to see that you got the rewards from that, and this is now the start of something moving forward.
Let's hope
And we actually said, we talked earlier about the influence of Alex Thistlethwaite, and he was actually one of the race winners, incidentally, at the weekend.
I'll never hear the end of it.
So, yeah.
I blame Murray for that, because we'll never hear the end of that.
Yeah, that was Murray Shepherd who he was sharing with in that 90-minute race. So that was an amusing result. But Alex has been not only working on this event, he's really helped look at other aspects of the venue. And one of the new things that we got for this year, which was first experienced at the touring car event a couple of weeks ago, was the new viewing area up Woodham Hill. And just talk us through a little bit about that, because from my side, it's great to see that a circuit with so much history, such a historic venue, is still innovating and creating new opportunities, new places for the fans to view from.
Yeah, well, it's something that I have been looking at since I got there in 2019, because it's always been this amazing flat space elevated alongside Woodham Hill, which gives you a view over the whole airfield, the whole circuit, yeah. pretty much. And you can't quite see Church because there's a very inconvenient hangar just in the way, blocking a very, very big hangar. Blocking
so
grid, but you can pretty much see the whole thing coming out of the complex, so through Noble, all the way around the back there. And it's spectacular. It's so, so cool. And there's nothing better than being on top, you know, being up and over the top of the circuit. So you get a completely different perspective looking down on the cars and seeing the backs of them as they go into the chicane, which no one's ever done at Thruxton, certainly not for many, many years since people used to stand on the side of the track and not care about it. So we've always looked at that and said, oh, it'd be great if we could do that. And when Alex took over, it was one of the things that I talked about quite early on, actually, was it would be great if we could bring that into circulation. It used to be designated as a helicopter training area. And so it's actually referred to as Heli South internally. But that's not a very catchy descriptor for where people can watch from. So I think Woodham Hill works a lot better. And it actually started with, I said, could we use it for the truck show, which we are doing now in 2 weeks' time? And I said, what I'd really like to do is put our show trucks up there, make it into a trucking festival on the top. So we'll have 300 show trucks up there next weekend, an entertainment ring with motorcycle stunt riders, bike stunt riders, ATV stunt rider, monster truck rides, all kinds of stuff like that. We're actually putting a tractor pull in as well, like we've done down at Pembrey the last couple of years. So there'll be a tractor pull on that area as well. And I think that will be spectacular with all the show trucks up there. And I think that'll be really popular next weekend. And I knew that would work. And so Alex said, okay, you do that. And so we agreed to fence it to make it obviously safe, which is prerequisite, stop people falling down the bank. Although actually that's Alex's fault because he didn't like the brambles that were on the bank, so he got them all cut down to make it look much nicer. But I did point out that brambles are a really good way of stopping errant children who fall down the bank to make sure that they don't end up on the Armco. So we fenced it instead. It's a more traditional way of stopping people going where you don't want them to do. And then he's very much into the idea of people having a good time. And so he bought a beer tent, and him and Sam and the crew from Thruxton Airfield all set that up. And that's what kicked it off for touring cars. And the feedback was great in advance, actually. It was really strange. We took an aerial shot during the catering meeting back in May, and then revealed it to the world as the new viewing area. And it went mad. I mean, everyone went, oh, yeah, fantastic, great work, Thruxton, amazing. I can't believe you're doing this. This is what I've been waiting for years and years. So, it's worked out really well, and I think it will continue to attract lots of people. Thruxton's not an easy place. Well, it is an easy place to spectate from, but it's not an easy place to create an atmosphere, quite linear. The spectator viewing areas are sort of around half of the track, but quite narrow in their own right. So we've got lots of great banking where you can get a really good view, but you can't really create a party or a focal zone on the outside of the circuit anywhere and still have a view of the track. And the joy of the Woodham Hill area is it's so big that you can put the entertainment up there and then people can still watch the action while they're there. So at the moment at Thruxton, you choose between watching the action and going to the entertainment, whereas up on Woodham Hill, you can do both. And I think that's why it feels like it's a really good place to be. We're enjoying having that open and giving people more options to where they want to be.
No, it's a really, really good addition. And I think certainly when I was there for the touring car event, there was lots of people taking advantage of it. And it's just great to see, as you said, a completely different view of the club chicane. We're so used to seeing the cars coming towards you, whereas this time you can sort of see them going away, bouncing over the curbs, and it's just a great, great view. And
it's quite a good view for track limits.
Well, yes.
I mean, yeah. you get a much better view. I noticed this when I was up there for touring cars. You get a much better sense of whether people are doing track limit violations. So maybe we should just set up a camera there and ping them.
Yes, sounds like a good idea. Although that might be a whole other can of worms.
Yeah, let's not go there.
Yeah. But speaking of sort of developments at Thruxton, am I right in thinking there are more potential ideas and plans in the pipeline moving forward about what you can do with the venue in future years?
Well, there's no end of ideas swirling around in my head, and I dare say Alex has got exactly the same going around in his head. It's a steep learning curve for him and his team to be involved with a venue for the first time. But every time we do something, I'm sure there's new ideas and new initiatives that will come out of it. But I think what we've seen is that having a fresh set of eyes, even one that isn't necessarily aware of all the limitations, just to challenge, just to provoke discussion. Not everything will come off, and a load of the ideas that we have are always rubbish anyway. But if you don't have those ideas coming in from left field, then you never get anything stimulated. You never push the boundaries, and we all need to drive things forward in order to keep moving the businesses.
Yeah, no, definitely. And like you say, having the more ideas, the more likely there is to be a really good one among them that really does work and make a difference. Yeah, no, definitely. No, it's an exciting time for the circuit and the club. And as you said, in the middle of a really busy spell for Thruxton, so we've got the track racing coming up in a few weeks. So we really appreciate you, Ben, taking the time out to join us on the podcast today and just give us an overview of what's been going on at Thruxton. It sounds like a really positive few weeks.
It's been great. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for everyone that came, and thanks for everyone that made it possible. I promise everyone can get a little bit of a break in July.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll be held to that. So thanks very much to Ben Taylor for giving us some brilliant insight there into Thruxton and the work that's been going on. And thank you all for listening, and we'll be back soon with another All Sport National podcast.